Welcome back to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome back to our Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3. You ready?
Let's complete the mission.
Welcome back to Watch Club. My name is CTO831, but you can call me Hugs. And this is our final Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 15, the series finale. If you're joining us for the first time, this is Watch Club, our weekly review series, kind of like a book club, but way better. Keep in mind, we will be going into full spoilers for this entire series and Star Wars in general. So if you haven't watched this week's episode yet, be sure to do so and then come right back in less than 12 parsecs. Now, before we all complete the mission, let me introduce you for one final time to our experimental crew of ragtag troopers. First up, he's taller than a Jawa, smaller than Jabba, and just as entertaining as Jar Jar. He's CT1231, also known as Edit.
I gotta say, if you're gonna be this depressing the entire time we do this Watch Club, like I just don't know if I can.
The
handle
last
it.
Time
it
we already, see this character, was, the last yeah, time exactly. we see this I don't character.
Wanna, yeah, let's keep the energy up, people, because the episode was a bit better than that.
All right. Well, right behind him in the lineup, we are so glad to have a true friend and war hero joining us once again, and her name is CTO118, but you can call her Brushstroke.
You know, when you started talking about the fact that this is the last time we're doing this, I actually got tears in my eyes. I cried enough at the show, but
there'll be future us. This, you know, the podcast is still going, but no,
I
hear you.
The batches, CT numbers.
We'll find a use for them one day, I'm sure. But listen, he's dropping down from way up high. He's the dopest, dankest dude on Dagobah. He's CT1006, but you can call him Joints.
Ahoy, hoy.
This show
might be going away, but Star Wars isn't, guys. Come on.
We made it, Batches. We made it to the end. I guess we can already tell how we're all feeling without giving anything away. I want to know. Who cried? Be honest.
I mean, I already said it. Duh.
Yeah.
I wasn't sobbing, but there were tears in my eyes. That's for
I
sure.
I teared up.
Yeah, I got I a couple. Up. I had at least one or two moments of that. So
mm-hmm. I mean, you're a dad now, so like you have to.
Sure. Right?
It's like I guess so. Part of the dad law.
It's the ongoing thing. I feel like now that I've had a child, I'm slightly more broken, if you will.
A little softer.
Softer. Maybe broken is not the good way to describe it, but I sob at everything now, and anytime there's a child, geez, I was sobbing in X-Men 97 with baby Nathan. Jeez. there was definitely some teary eyes for this finale, for sure.
For many reasons, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, this episode definitely hit different, and I'm so happy with what we got. I think, you know, I'm happy that it's as long as it was. We really should have seen it coming, you know, because
we predicted
the previous
last
two
week,
seasons.
Though. Yeah.
Well, we said we wanted it to be longer, but we weren't sure. And then, you know, the last two seasons were 16 episodes, and both seasons finales kind of were split up into two episodes. So the fact that this is just the 15th episode, but it's one epic conclusion. I'm sad to say goodbye to these characters, but I'm so satisfied with the finale, especially after the last three episodes that weren't, you know, we can admit they weren't really working a ton for us, or as much, I guess you would say. But one final time, we're gonna dive into Star Wars The Bad Batch. So before we free a Zillow to create a diversion, let's get into this final episode of Star Wars The Bad Batch. Episode 15, The Cavalry Has Arrived, directed by Stuart Lee, Saul Ruiz, and Brad Rau, three directors for this one episode. Wow. We kick off this final episode with Kevin, Sean, and Deanna Kiner's music setting the tone in a way that we've not seen before. The traditional loud stamp of the logo is replaced with a slow push-in logo, and the music lets us know that this episode is going to be special. We see the Batch closing in on Mount Tantiss, out of the jungle, about 5 clicks away. Wrecker is still injured from his fight with the Dryax in the last episode, but he presses on. Dr. Hemlock commands the vault be guarded until the security lockdown is lifted. He then meets with Rampart, and the two of them have a back and forth, one-upping each other, the only way you'd expect two Imperial officers would. And the result is Hemlock calling Rampart dispensable as he walks away. And Rampart, seeing into the cell across from him, he sees Nala Se. The two share a glance before his cell door closes. Let's see here. Megan, why don't you kick us off? What did you think of this different style of opener, as well as the confrontation between Hemlock and Rampart?
Yeah, it was definitely a darker start to the show in the way that it needed to be. The music was beautiful. I'm going to mention that I was emotional through this entire episode, but even just that fade in title made me emotional. It was like, this is going to be big and I'm ready for the ride. I don't want it to be over, but it's going to be a good ending. I can feel it from here. The music was gorgeous. And that little back and forth between Rampart and Hemlock was fantastic. Loved the weird, like, empire relationship between two people who think they have status of some kind. Is really funny to be on the outside of that, but knowing how serious those characters take their job and their position and their status was very interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think the opening with the title card of The Bad Batch, it wasn't that it was felt darker, it just felt more conclusive. It felt like a finale. It felt like the end. It wasn't the usual stinger, you know, that song that the drum that really kicks things off. But yeah, I liked it. It felt, as you said, Nate, it told you it was supposed to, this episode was meant to be special and it was going to be different from everything else. And yeah, the interaction between Rampart and Hemlock, it's like a power flex. You know what I mean? Like, they're just like, well, I have Imperial status and I was Imperial status here. Like, it's just, it was just a sort of, you see how this disillusion of power has distorted their minds so much that they feel like where they sit, they have more right than the other. And really, they don't. They're both disposable to the Empire, right? Like, they're both just, as we'll see as this episode unfolds, right? So as much as they want to flex what status and power they have, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, they're like two, like, frenemies at a Starbucks is kind of how I would put it. Like, they have to, like, they, or, you know, the coworkers that just hate each other, like, they have to technically be on the same side, but they're absolutely not.
Yeah, they're cordial up front, but behind closed doors, that's when they're like,
oh yeah, they say
barbs
shit.
Fly.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. No, I totally agree with you, Justin, with the opener feeling very conclusive. It's setting the tone that this is the finale, and we will see closure for at least the Bad Batch.
The end of this story.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, like, the last mission sort of mentality. Mm-hmm. Right?
It really sets the tone for the episode, and then again, following that up with this Rampart and Hemlock conversation was really cool, because it was showing, like, this is who we've been fighting against this entire time, and this is what they think of each other, basically. They're just, again, one-upping each other, trying to rub in each other's face that I'm still in the Imperial's graces type thing, and you want what I have type thing. It was very, very funny to witness, knowing, especially on a second watch, to knowing how their story ends.
And it's so directly opposite of the other side, right? Mm-hmm. When we see how the Bad Batch interact, you know, they're brothers, right? They work together so closely, and to see the dissension between these two Imperial officers, I think it was a phenomenal conversation. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I will. Like, the Kiners again just, bro, like, this is the last time I'll say it for this Star Wars The Bad Batch. No, I'm just kidding.
My God.
But no, the way that they were able to incorporate the Bad Batch theme in this episode alone, like, happy moments, sad moments, scary moments, it's just, it's so cool. They elevate this episode. And yeah, I think the other awesome thing was positioning Rampart right across from Nala Se. Like, it's a cold reminder to Rampart to say, like, you know, this is what you did this. This is your fault. And you know, his actions of Kamino are literally staring right back at him. And it's karma. Like, it's such a good sort of visual representation of karma, and he's kind of gotten exactly what's coming to him.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think also too, yeah, like, the whole situation, I guess, of Tantus could sort of be related to what Rampart did with Kamino, right? And he basically helped sort of set that up. So there's a lot of interesting meaning to, you know, why Rampart is still important, and I use air quotes for the first part of this episode, because of significance, especially given the fact of where we saw him in season one and how he was so integral then.
Yeah, wow. I didn't think about that before, that him staring Nala Se in the face and realizing he's the reason that
she's there.
She's the last Kaminoan. Yeah. And what continues to happen later that we'll talk about in the episode is very poetic.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah. So good. Okay, so let's keep going here. You know, this is going to be a little bit of a longer part of the description, but, you know, so strap in. It's a serious finale, okay? It's a final episode. Back with Emery and Echo, we see Echo continuing to look through the records for records of the vault to find Omega. And he questions why Emery is helping them. She admits to him that she was wrong about Tantus and that she can help him get inside. She's trying to do the right thing. While Omega and the kids carry out their plan, they cleverly distract and disable a medical droid and then reprogram it in another room. When Scalder grows suspicious and goes to check things out, Omega calmly continues her work. As Scalder arrives, the children approach with the droid, and as they engage in conversation, the droid slowly moves towards Scalder, ultimately incapacitating her with a needle. They command the droid to secure the area while they navigate through the removable panels on the walls, climbing through the delivery shafts to advance their escape. We see the batch again. Wrecker is still having a rough go, but he says he can make it. And then we cut back to Emery as she leads Echo into the vault, explaining how and why the Empire took the kids. The kids manage to reach the Zillow beast, and Baron, of course, begins to cry, alerting the troopers guarding the holding cell. They discover them, but it's too late. Omega has already found a way to wake the beast, and it begins to rampage, allowing Omega and the others to continue their escape. Emery and Echo arrive at the vault to see a ton of clone commandos as well as Hemlock. Commando Scorch informs Hemlock of the loose Zillow, and Hemlock demands Emery find Omega, telling her that her fate is now tied to Omega's. They hastily make their way out to find Omega and the other kids, as a very proud Echo explains that Omega's done exactly what he would have. So, Darcy, what did you think of Omega's plan and the release of the Zillow?
Well, I mean, you said you're done talking about the Kyners. I don't think I am, because the swell of the Bad Batch theme as the kids are preparing their escape was... it had me almost wanting to jump into my seat and fist pump. Like, I was so stoked when I'm like, yes, this is happening. And just the way that they managed to pull it off was very great. I will say, did they have to make the port on the droid so butthole-like? Like, I mean...
it was like cat butthole.
I know, right? Like, it's just, that seemed unnecessary. I'm like, any port could have done, but they had to make it a circular little starfish type thing. But this escape was awesome. And then, again, Echo's moment of dad proudness at the end there is like, that's just what I would have done. I'm like, oh, this is great. I love, you can see here how proud he is, and just the way he's carrying himself too is so good. This whole sequence is awesome. And again, just watching Hemlock start to panic is also great too. Like, we've been focusing on Crosshair's hand this entire season, and now we're looking at Hemlock, and he's doing this thing where he keeps grabbing his gloved hand and he's doing it more and more as this episode unfolds. And you're just like, this guy who's used to being in control is suddenly on the ropes, and he does not like it. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely a tell of his. That's a good call out. But yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think to see Omega throughout this episode enact the Bad Batch mentality and form her own batch of I guess ragtag individuals, if you will, or these kids, right, to try to get out. You know, it just goes to show how much they've instilled in her and how important, you know, the lessons that she's learned from them have like impacted her. So, and it really does foreshadow the events of our flash forward scene at the end, of where we get to her wanting to be fighting more, right, and actually making a difference more. So
yeah, I loved seeing her take charge. And you know, we've been bringing up, obviously, throughout this entire series, her brother's sort of their teaching sort of shining through her. And you absolutely see all of them in this finale, like, doing what Echo would do. But I love that we're also seeing Omega herself shine through. And there's a mm-hmm. little blink and you miss it sort of animation moment when Omega is commanding the droid to guard the entrance and telling the kids to make their way to the wall panels. She's simultaneously, maybe like subconsciously or without even thinking about it, she's checking on Dr. Scalder to make sure she's alive. She lifts her head and places it to the side to make sure she can breathe. And that's what makes Omega so special. And mm-hmm. so, like, it's her empathy. It's
her compassion,
fact that she
yeah.
still cares.
Yeah, she doesn't
even
kill
for
anyone.
The people. No, and but like for someone like Scalder, like, that is just the worst. Like, the fact that Omega is still able just to take a moment to make sure she's okay is just, again, that's what makes her different. And I love that mm-hmm. about her. Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah, I couldn't stop noticing throughout the entire episode, but specifically this scene, how she's taken on qualities of each Bad Batch brother. Mm-hmm. And what she's learned from all of them. It's so fun to, I mean, like you said, Nate, we've been talking about that through the entire series, but specifically in this moment, you really see it all shine.
Totally. And I think there's a ton of moments in this episode, like you said, that we get to see her shine. I loved seeing little Eva with her Lula doll, like, tucked into her back. Like, how Baron is on Jack's back. It's like, it's just this, like, she's so, like, there's like a little, like, smile she gives. She's so proud of herself that she's like, has a, I don't know, it's just super, super cute. That character is super, super cute. And I wanted to take a second to talk about a tweet that had us all riled up. We were at a screening for The Fall Guy, which, check out our review for The Fall Guy, as well as that movie, because it's fantastic. But, you know, there was a tweet that Jennifer Corbett put out, the writer of this show, head writer, and it, you know, it was she's been doing these cryptic tweets every Tuesday night. She's putting out a tweet of a GIF or something. She put out a GIF of Viserion the dragon, which, spoilers for Game of Thrones, is a dragon that comes back to life. And the words Plan 99. And we were like, zombie tech. But thank goodness it was actually in reference to the shot of the Zillow waking up. Like, that mm-hmm. shot of the eye
and the
is
water,
like,
receding,
frame for
yeah.
frame.
Yeah,
it's exact. The exact shot from Game yeah. of Thrones. And so I'm just so happy that the Zillow Beast situation happened in the first 10 minutes of this episode. We thought that mm-hmm. it might be, you know, it would feel too similar if that was the focus of the episode. So the fact that they just used it as, like, Omega's part of yeah. Omega's plan as yeah. a tool.
It was a means yeah. to an end.
Phenomenal. And yeah. that thing is so loud and so terrifying. There's an edit that they make where it cuts, like, mid sequence when it's in the middle of roaring, and it goes from, like, insane loudness to just deafening silence, and it's impactful. It's so good.
Just all the sounds associated with the Zillow Beast scenes are incredible. I mean, later on when it, like, finally breaks out, there's just such the most satisfying splat sound as it crushes a stormtrooper. Like, it's not a crunch, yeah. it's not a bang, it is a straight up splat. And it's just like everything else, the guy flying through the clouds, just yeah, the Zillow Beast in this episode was used just enough, and it was awesome for every second it was on screen.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised with that as well, that they didn't necessarily leverage that to, like, be kind of like the T-Rex in Jurassic Park that would just mm-hmm. pop in and just, like, tear shit up and then go away and then come back. And, you know, within the first 10 minutes, we get the introduction of the Zillow Beast, and it's off. It's off on Tantus. It's freed, yep. right? And so yeah. that's
Omega freed all the animals. Yeah. She always wants to free the animals. Yeah. Hemlock telling Scorch, to send the ships after the Zillow. There's a moment where he goes, I thought he kind of went full Emperor, because there's just a moment where he's, like, disregarding what Scorch is saying, and he just says, do it. And he doesn't say, like, do it, but he just says, do it. And I was yeah. like, I did the Leo meme, like, he's trying to be the Emperor. And I'm like, you're not, You're not the emperor, bro. Okay? You're a good bad guy. You're not the emperor. So
stop trying to make the emperor happen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. As he sips from his Starbucks, insulting Rampart from across this. Okay, so let's keep going here. Back with the batch, Crosshair's hand is getting worse as they get closer. And with Wrecker in rough shape, Crosshair demands that he press on while Hunter and Wrecker find a way to contact Rex. He urges them to let him initiate Plan 99 and that Clone Force 99 died with Tech. Oof. He says Omega needs both of them and that doing this alone is what he deserves. Hunter reminds him that Omega needs all of them. And so do the clones inside the facility. Wrecker says they've always known the risks, and so did Tech, and that doing this, and that they're doing this together. In the distance, the Zillow breaks out of the base and makes its way into the mountain. Crosshair asks the other two if that was Echo's handiwork or Omega's, and they both emphatically say Omega. It's so good. And now they have a way in. Omega and the other kids have made it to outside of the facility, and they need to climb a ladder. Jax explains to Omega his fear of heights, but she encourages him by telling him about her brother Wrecker, who's also afraid of heights, but is the most powerful soldier she knows. She reminds Jax to just stay focused on what's ahead, not what's below. So, Justin, what did you think of these back-to-back pep talk moments?
Yeah, this is where the episode's the strongest, right? It really does highlight that this is the moments between the brothers, between the clones and Omega and them, and the sort of family element and this sort of connectivity. That's what's so important about this finale. And these moments are that really do shine in this episode. I think it's great that you have this sort of real blunt conversation where they're getting to the point. You know, I think nobody really thought about how Crosshair might feel about Tech being gone. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I think in a lot of ways, he's kind of unraveling that bit of trauma with his brothers. And his brothers are saying, like, you know, it doesn't matter. We're still a unit, right? We're still
family.
We're still family, you know? And it doesn't mean that we leave each other behind, right? For any reason. So, yeah, these are the great moments of this is where it's emotional, right? And these yeah. In this finale is when you have these really quintessential moments for these characters.
I never even thought about that, Justin, the fact that Crosshair has had less time to mourn
to process
Tech than the other brothers, right? To process it. So, yeah, I mean, that could be a big part of what he's going through, right, with his hand.
Oh, for sure. He could totally be questioning himself. It's like, what if I was there? What if I was still part of the team? If the full batch was together? Would Plan 99 have even been on the table type thing? Like Justin said, these moments where you see, like, the pep talks, they're so uplifting, and you can understand why they're fighting. And I also just love the way that the Crosshair, Hunter, and Wrecker conversation almost seems like it's not over when the Zillow Beast pops out, and it's almost like Omega being like, guys, we got bigger fish to fry right now. Let's just come on in.
Yeah.
Come on in, and we'll figure it out from there type thing. And I really enjoy just the timing of it almost.
Yeah, yeah. It's to kind of break up the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that these moments, these pep talks, like you guys have said, are really quintessential animated Star Wars. There's so many moments in the Clone Wars. There's so many moments in Rebels where you get these, like, really beautiful moments between characters to uplift each other, but also almost to, like, shake each other and go, no, get it. And I think that Crosshair is kind of having that moment where he's holding so much guilt over the last season and a half of not being there and not doing what he should have done for his brothers and following this empire that didn't give a poop about him. So it's great to see his evolution. I think I've talked about that a bunch of times before. Crosshair's character development is maybe one of my favorite parts of this whole show.
Yeah,
so I'm really happy to see him get to a point where Hunter forgives him and calls him his brother again. I think that was a really great moment. And I love that Omega got to bring up Wrecker and, you know, she's telling these kids about her brothers because she's so excited for them to meet them. And
not telling
them
about his strength either. Using his weakness as a means to encourage. And it's just, it was, again, so beautiful.
Yeah, she's not just, you know, she's not, now she's gone from learning
to passing
not just
on
practicing,
knowledge.
But she's passing it on. She's teaching them.
Yeah.
And That line of just stay focused on what's ahead, not below. I'm sorry, that's very Qui-Gon coded. I know it's something that she learned from her brothers, but it's so Qui-Gon coded. I was like, yeah, that's sick. That's like a tattoo. That's dope. maybe it's in my next one. Maybe we'll see.
Tramp stamp.
yeah, right on the lower back is where I'm putting that, with a little Zillow beast as well.
Well, the placement raises so many questions. I'm sorry.
but I think we should let's keep going here because Omega really wants us to by letting loose the Zillow. Scorch informs Hemlock of the Zillow's escape, and against Scorch's warnings, Hemlock sends shuttles after the beasts weakening their defenses. However, this will cause the batch to enter the base exactly where Hemlock wants them. He then activates four new Clone X troopers, each of them with different weapons and attributes, or it might have been three new ones. The batch make it to the base, but they're met by a squad of troopers as well as these Clone X troopers pretty much immediately. Crosshair commands Hunter and Wrecker to fall back as he shoots a sticky bomb, collapsing a bridge onto the enemy troops. A shuttle flies in and fires on them, causing Hunter to get pinned down under some debris. Wrecker pulls him out, but they're attacked again. And finally, as they're all pinned down, Crosshair has his shooting hand chopped off. Okay, so let's talk about these Clone X troopers. They were, to me, they were the evil bad batch. They're the anti
very clear
bad
that.
Batch.
Yeah. We were already getting that with the introduction of the first X trooper, right? We were getting vibes of like
Crosshair.
Is it tech? Is it a clone? All this sort of stuff. So the fact that there's three more, you know, it does raise a lot of questions, which, again, is my biggest problem with this episode is the introduction of these guys in like a Hail Mary final thing. Well, it's interesting. It's just like, but they don't answer anything.
Yeah.
So I'll, before we get to all of that, I'd love to hear what everyone else has to say, though.
Well, and again, before we go positive, I'm going to jump in on this negative train. To me, it feels like a repeat of the Merrick situation, where we had all this hype about who he is, what's his story, only for the unsatisfying dusting that we got from him at the end there. Mm-hmm. And this feels very much the same, where it's like we're introduced to these cool characters that we don't know who they are, what they are, why are they in these crazy like cryo tanks things that like almost, you know, Darth Vader's meditation chamber. I don't know. It's just so many things that were raised and then are never addressed again and never will be based on where this episode ends. That, yeah, biggest issue with this episode for sure.
What I liked about them, and this might just be the the Star Wars poet in me, but I liked that they were, you know, like we had one that was the size of Wrecker, right, with the shield. We had one that had Tech's glasses, essentially goggles on his face with the two swords. We had one that was very, you know, Crosshair, one that was kind of like Hunter or maybe Echo. But I think the biggest thing for me is the fact that they all were just pretty much just as capable as the Bad Batch. They were the strongest of, like, sort of, you know, in terms of combat that we've seen. And I think that this is what the Bad Batch could have been if they just followed orders, right? This is a direct mirror to them in their final fight, in their final push to sort of say, hey, this is what you could have become. And I thought that was really smart and really strong, and I thought that was, I don't know, I thought I liked that aspect. I understand how we all sort of were hyped up to know, like, is it, you know, who is that mysterious trooper? But at the end of the day, I actually thought this was significantly better than like a Merrick situation, because to me, Merrick was hyped up and then didn't really amount to even something that I felt was symbolic, whereas at least these troopers definitely gave that to me.
Yeah, I'll give that to you.
Yeah, they have the era of Bad Batch replica to them, right? And I don't doubt that that's what they were trying to do with these Clone X troopers, whatever they've called them, right? But I think the idea of, especially what else is left on the table towards the end, you know, like with what this series was kind of talking about and the way they were very obviously hinting at visuals, like alluding, like, oh, his helmet's off. Like, is this a reveal for who we might see? Like they were definitely playing with us at that point. And to do all of those things like you've described and to really hit all of that, I know it's going off of just look and feel rather than definitiveness, right? Rather than saying like, yes, these are clones of you guys that we've weaponized. We're using the way that we would use them because your skill set is so unique. And that totally makes sense. That they could have somehow intertwined that with a evil Hemlock speech that kind of sure. gave a little more air to not just what they were, but what this facility was and what it was yeah. doing outside of, you know, introducing a term, Project Necromancer, hinting at it, not really doing much with it though. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you know, they the Bad Batch obviously in this finale needed some sort of combative enemy that was going to be able to go against them. These four Clone X troopers feel very convenient with no explanation. Is really what it comes down to.
Yeah. Especially when like that whole, you know, explanation of the facility and stuff like that easily could have been done if Rampart was brought to Hemlock before the prison and a little gloating kind of tour of the facility and just talking about what's going on before
sure.
sticking yeah. Rampart in a hole he'll never come out of type thing. That would have almost set up a bit better because, again, they came out of nowhere. It's just a convenient, you know, time-killing thing to keep the Batch from getting to where they need to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm more on Nate's side with this. I enjoyed every second of it. I thought it was so cool. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a really good, like you said, Nate, kind of like a mirror that the Empire held up to the Bad Batch to say, like, this is how powerful you all are and we're using that. And can you be more powerful than yourselves almost? Can you surpass what just the weapons that you are? Like, Can you be bigger than what you were trained to be, I guess, which I think is a really poetic thing to say in the finale episode.
Yeah, but I definitely agree that there's a message of a mirror to the Bad Batch because they're free of all control. They make their own decisions. They do their own things. And that might be the reason why they are so good at what they do. And
that's why they win.
Exactly. But they were once a product of clones that were controlled. And that is more or less the remnants of what we see in these four Clone X troopers is what if they were good soldiers that followed orders? And how were those orders instilled, right? Like, it looks like, as Darcy pointed out, it's some sort of high-tech Darth Vader meditation chamber style that's keeping them alive, and maybe they are dead clones resurrected. I'm not sure, but again, there's all those questions that I have. I don't know if I'll ever have answered unless they explore that more. Again, beyond intrigue and definitely the combat in this scene was so phenomenal. Good. But again,
like,
it was
parkouring over stormtroopers.
Sure, absolutely.
Like, they don't mean anything.
The maze situation and how they had to weave around walls and stuff like that. It was so military style driven while also being very retro in its sort of parkour style. But again, as I go back to what I was saying, they had to have some sort of opposing threat that was going to match them in their combat. And this was very convenient for them to have it. It was flawless, don't get me wrong. But again, it was just a plot thing that I felt was just like, why introduce these characters?
Again, just talking about the combat, just the way that these ex-troopers are using regular troopers as meat shields, like the one related guy, and you're saying parkour's over him. He's like, yeah, he's parkouring over the guy as that guy's getting shot in the chest. Like, they are there for one mission, that's to capture and bring down the bad guys. And it's they do a great job of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe I got it wrong, but I was thinking that these guys are almost like the initiation of Project Necromancer. Like, the way they all come out of these pods looks like they're zombies that are like waking
for
up,
sure.
The way their bodies kind of move. So is this the first stage of like what Hemlock would have shown the Empire to say, look at the, and no, I know, and we don't have that question answered, but maybe it wasn't meant to be answered, and that's, you know, we see that unfold through this episode. I get where you'd be frustrated with not having that answer, yeah. but I also think so many other loose ends were really well tied up yeah. in yeah. this episode, which we all kind of weren't sure would be. So I can forgive introducing something that we don't get to figure out.
Yeah, and not to badger it over the head, but I think that it's like there's two sides to this finale. And the side that it really succeeds in is closing the stories of the characters and the important moments and really creating a sense of, in my opinion, poetic alliance into the first season. Things that were established in the first season we see concluded in a lot of ways and sort of wrapped up in this finale from a character standpoint. But any of these bigger questions mm-hmm. that are Star Wars ethos, they're all just left on the table. Right. And again, it depends on, we talked about it last week. It's like, what do we want this finale to do? I was saying, I was hoping we get a little more answers in certain places with things like these Clone X troopers. But because of how much is left on the table, you know, I was going to save this for the end. I wonder if there's more to explore in this story outside of the Bad Batch in an animated way. That's why things haven't been answered. I would like to see that potentially. But if this is it, you know, I don't know if
Justin, they're not chopping Dave Filoni's hands off, okay? So I think we're going to be okay. I think he'll keep writing.
Oh, yeah. I also just want to mention that here is another moment that I bawled my eyes out because I thought something really bad was going to happen. I mean, something did happen, but
sure.
I thought like bad, like the
head
ending
chopped
of
off.
One of the... Yeah, yeah.
yeah. Well, and the fact that it was the crosshair... like the dark version of Crosshair, the sniper that we've been following, the fact that he was the one to chop off the shooting hand, I thought was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's keep going here. Let's keep going here. We continue to search for the kids with Emery, and Echo witnesses his brothers being wheeled away down a hallway. I thought that was kind of a weird way to do it, but they're like on this like little gurney thing. he chooses to prioritize finding the kids before they can save the rest. Then, just as Omega and the other kids are discovered, Echo stuns the trooper that found them, and Omega is so relieved. They get to a shuttle to escape, and Omega and Echo stay back to save their brothers, while Emery, using the coordinates given to her by Echo, with the kids, they fly away to safety. Hemlock, now holding the rest of the batch in his private lab where he conditions clones, begins to torture Hunter. He expresses that he's looking forward to making them into fine operatives. And if they die in the process, that's okay. They've got a ton of other clones that they can make use of. He's then interrupted by an incoming transmission from Governor Tarkin, forcing him to leave the room, and he learns that the Emperor isn't happy and that Tarkin is on his way. So, Darcy, Emery survived, and Hemlock sort of reveals his intentions, at least in that moment, with the Bad Batch. What did you think of these sort of extreme opposite paths that we've seen with these two scientists?
I am surprised that Emery made it out there, but I'm also relieved because the whole redemption in your final moment thing is a trope that's been played out in Star Wars and a lot of other things quite a bit. So the fact that she gets a chance to redeem herself in the eyes of these kids and maybe help them find their families as they go off, I really enjoyed that. And it just, again, mirroring that with Hemlock and how he is full on gung-ho leading into this, like, I am smart, what I'm doing is going to be in, like, the utmost importance to the Emperor, I can't do any wrong type thing. And then even just his annoyance at being bothered by Tarkin, the guy who's giving him the money to do what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's like, oh great, he's him again.
It was like Mom, I'm playing my games. Like,
it
was
very, yeah.
He had like that sadistic smile and he just like frowned right away when he heard that his boss was calling and ruining his fun. Totally. But I mean, shout out to Jimmy Simpson in this series, let's be honest. Like, I thought the line delivery when there's a moment where he says he's looking at Crosshair and he says CT-9904 resisted my conditioning in the past, but I've made alterations to my method. And the sort of pauses he takes between the words alterations and to my method, it just, you know, just highlighting what exactly happened to just then to Crosshair with losing his wrist, literally alterations to his wrist. Like, it was, I thought that was well done. I thought that was, again, just another way to sort of amp up this, this very sadistic nature that he has.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's great to see kind of like him sort of unravel and lose control. I think there's a great call out, Darcy that like his tell is very much like him holding his wrist and stuff like that and making more of a point, because I think that hand with the black glove, we don't know what, obviously, if there's anything underneath that that's could be not human, it could be, you know, something else, or it could be whatever, but it I think it represents the hand that he wields, right? And the hand that he wields in this facility as a sign of power, and him holding it and tweaking it, it's very much like he's trying to remind himself that he still has that power, right? And he has that wrist. And so I think to see it sort of unfold, you know, you kind of get two sides of it. You see it, him be, you know, really cocky and talking into the clones and saying like, yeah, like I got a fucking great method here. It's going to work, right? And then he goes into Tarkin, and then he's getting like reamed out by his boss, and he's like, oh shit. Like, you know, you see him kind of like lose a little bit of that after. So it's nice that they were slowly building out this character, kind of show his poker face.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Seeing Hemlock lose control slowly over this episode is an incredible arc. It's what we've all been waiting to see. And watching him sort of torture Hunter is really intense. And, you know, we've seen them in bad spots, but I don't know that we've ever seen them this bad and of shape and in a bad situation that we know only one person can get them out of. So it was definitely a good middle point to the episode, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this was kind of like the middle of the episode, right? I loved Echo calling Omega his little nickname for her, Havoc 5. And that's how she immediately knows that it's Echo underneath the Stormtrooper helmet. And yeah, I think I'm glad Omega, or I'm glad that Echo sees Omega, just like we talked about last week with Crosshair. Echo very much sees Omega as, you know, an asset. Like at first I thought he was going to be like, okay, get on the ship with the kids, but no, of course not. He needs her to complete this mission. He needs her to save their brothers. So she's staying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he trusts her, especially given the fact that he's spent the least amount of time with her through this season. So it's, you know, he's been off doing stuff. It's interesting to see how there's just this sense of growth in her character that they are acknowledging and are able to just say, yeah, like she's got this. She knows her shit.
Yeah, he's like, you released a Zillow Beast all on your own?
Yeah.
Let's use you.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'll do.
So good. Okay, so Omega and Echo manage to make their way into the holding cells for the other clones, and they begin to free them all as well as Rampart and Nala say. Rampart wants to leave immediately, but Echo gives a call to arms speech and says, clones don't leave our brothers behind, encouraging the other clones to join the fight. Nala say tells Omega she can't let what she knows about cloning and her work remain in the Empire's hands. The only way Omega can be free is if Hemlock is gone and the databanks are destroyed. Omega and Nala say their goodbyes, and Omega gives her Emery's data pad to gain access. Rampart decides to follow her into the room, picking up a blaster along the way. He makes it into the room and begins to copy all the data to the data pad to use it as a bargaining chip. Nala say tells him her work will never belong to the Empire, or him, it will always be Kaminoan. He shoots her, and as she falls to the ground, she drops a thermal detonator, killing Rampart and destroying all the databanks containing the information on Omega and Project Necromancer. So we got the death of Edmund Rampart, but more importantly, the death of Nala Se, the end of a character that we've known for so long. What a way to go out. Megan, what did you think of the death of Nala Se?
Well, this is that poetic moment I was talking about before. The fact that Rampart, you didn't need to follow her. You could have just run. You could have figured out something else. But you just couldn't leave well enough alone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think intentionally she was going to go in there and, like, sacrifice herself. But the moment Rampart followed her in, she's like, okay. This information is going to die with the Kaminoans, and that's fine with me. It was the big blow-up death I wanted for Rampart, yeah. and a very poetic and heroic act on Nalase's part.
Mm-hmm. She didn't even hit the ground. Like, she let go of the grenade that was in her hand, right? Like, she just, once she was shot, she just dropped it. And I think that, you know, she knew in that moment she had to sacrifice herself for this, because, you know, she's got a laser blast in her chest, right?
But I think she had already started the bomb when she saw Rampart.
True.
So she was
true,
like, yep.
Yeah. So she just started it in her hand. Yeah, that's true. That is actually mm-hmm. true.
What I like is the fact that we get like a callback to the first episode, or at least the episode where Nala Say hands Omega, like, you'll need this to try and get out of here, type thing. Oh, and we get Omega handing it back to Nala Say.
Wow.
I thought that was a very cool
an even better goodbye than what because I was like, why didn't they hug? But to your point, Darcy, that's perfect.
That is. It's like, here, you know what you have to do with this, type thing. And I really like that. But also, this again, that death, so satisfying to see Rampart thinking he's got the like the best hand ever, only to see that he's messed it all up for everyone. Like,
the rolls to his foot is like the best moment.
And the fact that he was the one that, you know, killed the Kaminoans, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He took them out. She's blowing him up just like he blew up her home planet. Like, you know, there's just a lot of that tying of a loose end, right? And to your point, Meg, like, he could have just left, but he had to find something. He knew that she was super important. They kept her around, and he wanted something that he could, you know, bargain his way back to power, right? Because he knew he had none of it left. So, yeah, it was good to see him go the way he did, because it was deserved.
It was you know, I think, Megan, you had talked about a situation where Hemlock coldly shoots Rampart in the back, and I was like, oh, we were all like, yeah, I was super stoked on that. And I think this was just as you've been saying, the word of the day, poetic. I think the karma, you know, it's like karma knowing, we could go with something like that.
Oh my god.
I think the fact that they're you know, Nala Say was also, you know, used and discarded by the Empire. Both of them were. Their paths are actually very similar, but inside they're completely different. And she made the right choice in the end of the day. And technically, she delays the progress of Project Necromancer significantly if the next time we heard about it is not until the Mandalorian after the second Death Star. So the fact that, like, that's her, you know what I mean? She's the reason that the Project Necromancer probably wasn't able to get off the ground as early as it could have. So phenomenal moment. I loved it. So good. Okay. Omega and Echo make their way to where the batch members are being held. Omega manages to inform Echo on what she can see, and then she's able to free one of Wrecker's hands as Echo and the other troopers keep the clone X troopers occupied. Omega is caught, however, and Hemlock releases a toxic gas below them where Echo and the other clones are fighting. He's unaffected because he's got a helmet on, but the other unmasked clones begin to pass out. With Echo now captured as well, Scorch informs Hemlock it's time to go. Wrecker wakes up and breaks out of his restraints and begins to fight. Hemlock secures himself to Omega using some binders, and along with Scorch, they escape. Wrecker tells Hunter, "Go get the kid," and he and Crosshair chase after Hemlock. They arrive at a bridge where Scorch is guarding Hemlock as he drags Omega closer to his private shuttle. In the harsh rain, we see Scorch immediately taken out. Then Hemlock pulls Omega closer to the edge of the bridge, holding her at gunpoint. Omega pulls out the tool she took from Emery, and while Crosshair doubts himself, Hunter tells him to shoot the binders, telling him to trust Omega, saying, "Wait for her, then take the shot." Omega stabs Hemlock in the leg and lifts her arm up as Crosshair shoots the binders. Hunter shoots Hemlock and he falls off the bridge. Omega runs to her brothers, embracing them both in a big hug, and they manage to meet up with the others to escape Mount Tantus mere seconds before Tarkin arrives. What an incredible moment. Justin, what did you think of this sequence on the bridge, the death of Royce Hemlock, and the level of trust that they put in Omega in this moment?
I don't know if he's dead, but we'll talk about that later. But but yeah, like I think that this again is one of those beautiful moments where we see just things collide. You know, Crosshair and Hunter have been at opposite ends this entire season, and they've sort of been trying to find their way back to each other. And in this moment, they totally do, with Omega on the other side of this bridge, sort of working with them, right? And I think it's just the beauty of seeing the batch work together. And in no matter which number or how many there are, there's a sense of connectivity between them that is fluid. And it feels so like it's sort of like the Force, if you want to think about it. It's something that's like intuition. It's so deeply rooted in their connection. And yeah, it was awesome. The moment he, you know, Crosshair doubting himself, Hunter saying, you got this, just wait for Omega. Like, this was a moment where I was like almost like anxious and like was getting like teary eyed, and then they pull it off, and then there's obviously the I guess them coming together, and she hugs Crosshair, right? And I think Crosshair needed that hug. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That was that, like, Crosshair desperately needed that hug. And Hunter, you know, was obviously super, super proud that, like, you know, Crosshair's he came through. He believed in himself, and he was able to pull this off, and he had something to prove given the fact that part of the reason why she got taken away was because he failed. So
he missed the shot.
Yeah, he missed the shot. Yeah. He got the shot this time, and it's yeah, it's the poetry. It's just it's there.
Yeah, I think there's so many moments in this part of the episode that you explained, Nate. One thing that I find really satisfying is that we've been predicting that possibly one of these troopers, the ex-troopers that you're talking about, could be a revived tech. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of glad that it's not. And yeah, that tech is
dead.
Gone. Yeah. Like, that is a satisfying end, because I feel like there's too many moments in Star Wars, but also these sort of fantastical series in general, where you feel that a character has passed away or died or something, but then they're brought back, so it almost feels
it
like there was
it.
No point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm very happy. It's sad that Tech's dead, but very glad that he is gone, and his execution of Plan 99 was for a reason, and it holds value. I'm really happy with that. I'm really, again, another moment where Omega is being is showing her knowledge. She has learned these things. She kept that pin that she took from Emery because she knew she would need it. You never know when, but you're gonna need it. And Hunter saw her pull that out and was like, she's got this. I know she's got this. And whether he's dead or not, I think that was a great ending for Hemlock. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The like slow
Empire,
couple
Emperor
of bullets
fall.
And
yeah.
Oh, yeah. 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 You know, when you fall in Star Wars, you might not be dead, but yeah. I hope he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. That fall into the shadows is so Star Wars. And unless you're Mace Windu, you might come back from it.
Oh, no. Mace is coming back for sure.
But I love the fact that Crosshair lost his shooting hand. That was very clearly established. And not once in this whole segment do we see him shaking at all when he's like on the line trying to fight for Omega. And I feel like that. Earlier in the episode, he talked about how it's what he deserves to be, you know, to be the one to get lost and left behind, getting Omega out. And it's almost like losing his hand was payment enough for him to now turn over that new page and really start anew. And it was so cool to see Omega, again, ran to him first before pulling Hunter in. Like, Crosshair is just as important to her as Hunter is. And it's beautiful. Again, beautiful way to end this whole story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think the way that they sort of are giving us the greatest hits from an animation standpoint, setting this in the thunder rainstorm
on a high
situation,
walkway, like,
on a high walkway, I'm like, they know what they're doing. and it was crazy how quickly they took out Scorch. I mean, Scorch is a clone commando. And not only that, but that was a clone that in this moment they blasted to death. And normally we do see them try to, with clones,
stun
them. But here they're like, no, this is Omega we're talking about, okay? Mm-hmm. We're not going to stun you, bro. Not pulling any punches. The moment she knows what to do, wait for her, then take the shot. Mm-hmm. And the sort of half nod between Omega and Crosshair summed up an entire season of character growth with no dialogue.
Yep.
Major tears. Holy crap. And then in terms of Rampart being dead, Justin, I'm happy to get into this with you.
Rampart's dead. Hemlock is what we're questioning.
Sorry, that's what I meant. Hemlock. The fact that the Hemlock, is Hemlock dead? Is he truly dead? The fact that Tech didn't get brought back in this series,
sure. Yeah.
Maybe that's not how it works for this
series.
He also
got like three shots, right? Like they shot him once.
Right? Oh, that's my
and
thing.
Then they,
that's even and more.
Then they, yeah, yeah. And then he yeah. fell off, right?
They doubled down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
But
you're absolutely right.
His hand. What if he was experimenting?
Oh my God.
What if he was experimenting on himself?
There's another
and that's
Hemlock.
Why
that's
he was
exactly what I was thinking.
Right? So like somehow Hemlock has returned in a future.
Well, that's why, like you
sequence?
Said, yeah, like Project Necromancer is gone and all the data is gone. And I guess that would mean that all the data that he has is gone. But if he is also gone, then it's really gone. But if he's not, then maybe there's a chance that it might not be gone. Like, I don't know. Like, it could be still around. Because like, I just feel like
you could argue that Emery, has that knowledge too, but not on the same level. Not in the same level as Hemlock, though. Like he definitely was gatekeeping information that would lead to the true.
He gatekeep things from us, the viewers. We don't even know anything.
That bitch.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to know. I don't have any influence.
Well, in the end, he was dispensable. Okay, let's talk about this next sequence here. On a now destroyed Tantus base, we see one of Tarkin's science officers informs him that after a thorough investigation, none of Hemlock's research was salvageable. Tarkin orders that the base be destroyed and that the funding for Project Necromancer now be shifted over to Project Stardust. I'm loving all these projects.
So cool.
Really quickly, as we kind of get to the ending sequences of this episode, everyone remembers what Project Stardust is, right, Darcy?
Yeah, yeah. Isn't it that big like blaster thing that like?
Yeah, it's a really big gun.
It's like a planet size.
Yeah, almost planet. Yeah, no, yeah. Moon.
It looks like a moon.
More of a moon.
Yes, moon size.
Yeah. Okay,
It is no moon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a planet killer, though, right? Is that?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's
I think
it.
They
yeah.
say
that's
that it. At
yeah.
some point.
But it's funny. It's crazy how this is the last time Tarkin will say that in The Bad Batch. No, I think it's funny how Tarkin immediately shifts his funds into his project, right? Like,
yeah.
It's a little bit of foreshadowing for how he continues to screw over his colleagues, like Krennic in the future. Like, it's interesting that Project Necromancer.
Well, that's his drive, though.
Right.
Right.
But there must be a few plans on the table for this to go from like the most important thing to now Tarkin just being like, all right, let's forget this, take the money, put it into this thing that I'm enjoying and I'm going to, you know, steal ideas from and say that I'm leading to make the Emperor proud of me. I don't know. It makes me wonder how much Tarkin is gatekeeping from the Emperor.
Well, I mean, I've already talked about how fractured the Empire is with all these different plans. Like, this is the Stardust has been in the works before the Empire was even a thing. And,
yeah.
and so were probably all the Emperor's other machinations, because he is just desperate for power and desperate to stay alive. So I think it's more him. And going back to Tarkin, though, like, him, you know, snatching those funds almost instantly is seen with his, you know, adversary. He's almost the rival mentality he has with Thrawn, specifically in the Thrawn books. A lot of Thrawn is trying to push through the TIE Defender program, the one with the three things. The whole thing about Lothal, that was the TIE Defender, or like Thrawn's pet project. And Tarkin was always adamant about trying to shut that down. So seeing him sweep in here and immediately transfer funds just fits the bill of him. Like he has his priorities straight, and he doesn't care who else in the Empire he's fucking over. He wants to make this giant gun. So,
and this was very much foreshadowed earlier on when he popped in to like talk to Hemlock, and then Hemlock was like, "Oh, I'm on a project. The Emperor, you know, it's top tier, man." Right?
Yeah.
Like he's like talking to Tarkin, and Tarkin's like, "Well, I'm rather concerned about the money that's being spent on this, and you know, what is it yielding and stuff like that." And his sort of concern, but he's worried about the money not because of it's taking away from his funding, right? And also that's funding that he could be getting to make a planet killer, right? So it's like, it, you know, to see that piece here wasn't like wasn't a huge shocker in my opinion, because it kind of like it seemed like if this whole thing has failed, what are you going to put money into? If the data's gone, everything's gone, you know, the guy who was working on it's gone, well then yeah, he's going to be like, yeah, just reallocate this money. This isn't it. This is over.
We also talked about it on our Tales of the Empire spoiler-free review. Go check out our Tales of the Empire spoiler-free review. But the very super subtle use of Vader's theme, well, Tarkin mentions Project Stardust. Like, the Kiners just have such a phenomenal way of connecting these stories through the use of music. And it's not like blaring Imperial March. It's like the slow, sad Vader, like when Vader, I think it's like when Vader's dying, it's like that really sad version of the theme, and the way that they're able to sort of hint at that in the background while Tarkin's talking, it's just, you know, reminding you of sort of what's to come, what's to sort of, you know, going forward. And I don't know, I thought that was, they're killing it. They're always killing it.
They're always killing it.
Okay, so let's kind of get to almost the final sequence here. Back on Pabu, we see the kids are now safe, and we learn that Hunter and Rex will work on finding their families. We also see Emery and Echo decide to go to Pandora to help the other escaped clones find their... Or sorry, Pandora. Pantora? They're not going to
Pantora.
Pantora.
Pantora. Is that where they go? Okay. It's like
we also see they connect their tails together.
Yes.
We also see Emery and Echo decide to go to Pantora to help the other escaped clones find new homes. And he mentions that Senator Chuchi would love to know what Emery has to share. Emery says she'd like to help however she can. Omega, Hunter, and Batcher sit under a tree, and she expresses that the kids are finally safe. And now that Hemlock's gone, and now that all the data is destroyed, they nod goodbye to Echo as he leaves. And Omega asks about the other clones and if they'll stay with them on Pabu. Hunter says it's up to them; they're free to follow their own paths. He says we've all fought enough battles for one lifetime. Now we get to choose who we want to be. Omega asks, like what? And he responds with, whatever we want, kid, whatever we want. Crosshair and Wrecker sit with them as the screen fades to black. What a beautiful, incredible moment. Before we get to the thing that we all freaked out about, I'm sure, the epilogue, I want to know, you know, Megan, what did you think of this ending? Emery and Echo's, you know, new adventure, and Omega's still her concern for everyone else.
Yeah, well, of course, always. I love that Emery's going to go with Echo and be part of this kind of clone side of the rebellion. She's got a lot of very important information, I'm sure, that she can share. So that's going to be a huge point on the rebel side when the rebellion truly begins. I also thought it was really fun that I only caught it the second time I was watching. The kids are walking around with those like teen clones, which I thought was such a cool like callback again to the beginning of the season.
And
they're all so in, that like, was fun to see them.
They're all in
them.
Like civvy clothes. Like they're all in like
Pabu clothes.
Hawaiian
Pabu
shirts
fashion.
And they're like linen pants like, and like stuff. Beaded necklaces. Like they're from the 90s Beach Boys too.
Yeah. Anyway. and then, yeah, we had so many predictions that this show was going to end on a lot darker note, and I'm so glad that it didn't. It was a very beautiful, hopeful moment, and I bawled like a baby just watching the five of them, including Batcher, sitting under that tree in complete peace. Mm-hmm. Like they were truly, truly free, and that was the most beautiful ending.
Yeah. Seeing them after their fight has truly ended was just so nice to see. And after us speculating, not all three of them would be sitting there at the end, to get all of them there and to have such closure for, again, Crosshair's story. Like, we know that he probably won't be broken going forward. Like, he's got a family unit now. He knows he belongs. And that's what they can do. They can just, whatever they want. I love how that's so open-ended, and like you can clearly tell what they want is to just be a family, and it's so lovely.
Yeah, this is, again, there's these very specific moments that we've kind of touched on where we get to see closure for these characters and things kind of tie up. And this is such a signature moment, you know, everything they've been fighting for, having their own, choosing their own path, you know, being their own individuals outside of just being clones and being tools, I guess, in a lot of ways, you know, they've found peace. They've found, you know, a home and that's together. You know, that's the beautiful thing. We've watched them do this together the entire time. And if anything, you know, again, as I was saying before, with the things that are left on the table to discuss, you know, the show was never ever just about those things, right? They introduced some cool stuff and I wish they answered it, but you know, it is about these characters and the story. And I love that this closing moment really honors that. It really respects it. It says, this is what this show was all about. And that's why you can look at something like this and appreciate and understand, like, there was always a foresight of knowing what this was about and who it was about.
Yeah, it was, I think it was perfect. I think that the such a gorgeous shot under the tree. And I love how, to your point, Justin, everything has come around completely for the Bad Batch, but also for the story of the clones in Star Wars. Like, this feels like a phenomenal ending to the clones story. Emery, getting to now work towards finding new solutions for displaced clones and maybe find new homes and working with Echo and also working with Senator Chuchi is huge, especially given that that's, you know, part of the fledgling rebellion. And I love that Omega, even now, after everything they've been through, she's still worried about literally everyone else. She can't understand the idea of, you know, of being whatever she wants to be, because, you know, in a sense, she kind of has had a life full of adventure. She's gotten so much of what she's wanted, and of course she's wanted freedom for her and her brothers, but she's kind of had a very up until that moment fulfilled life. And so here Hunter is reminding her that she's even more free than she ever was before, because they don't have to fight. If they want to fight, obviously that's something that we will get to in a moment. But I just thought that, yeah, it's so good.
That just made me think of in season one when she feels dirt for the first time. Oh. Let's see how far she's come.
And like, again, this has been such a great exercise of character-focused story, right? Like from season one to two, just to create that. There's a lot of winking and nodding to the fans of this series from the get-go too, right? To be able to find those signature moments and call them out and say, like, oh, I remember that. This, you know, this is how this connects. Like, that's what I believe Brad Rao and Jennifer Corbett, they wanted, you know, Filoni, the entire team, they wanted this to be a sort of a very much a wrap-up of all of the great moments we've seen.
Well, speaking of wrapping up, we've got one more thing to talk about before we wrap up. And this, you know, this is our last What's Gonna Happen
okay.
batch. It is though. And I, you know,
stop,
I want to
crying,
know,
man. Jesus. What's gonna just get it out.
Okay. So just as we thought it was over, we're treated to one more moment. The screen fades in as we see someone walking into the caves on Pabu. They approach a docked ship and turn the lights on, and we realize it's Omega, now clearly older. Hunter, Batcher, and Gonki are there waiting for her to catch her before she sneaks off. Omega tells Hunter that the rebellion needs pilots now more than ever. He reminds her that he just wants to keep her safe, but she tells him she's not a kid anymore and that he doesn't have to worry about her. He says, "You're our kid, Omega. You always will be." And like by that point, I was like, "Love." She says, "Hunter, you've all fought enough. This, it's my fight. I'm ready." Hunter responds with, "Yeah, I know you are, but I'm not." The two hug, and Omega asks Hunter to keep an eye on Crosshair, Wrecker, and Batcher too. She begins to walk onto the ship as Hunter looks upon her one last time and says, "Omega, if you ever need us, we'll be there." Omega sits in the pilot seat with Gonki behind her. She adjusts Tech's goggles on the dash, powers up the ship, and flies off to her next adventure. Hunter looks on as Batcher whines, and the last thing we hear in this series is, "It's all right, girl. She'll be fine." And that ends Star Wars The Bad Batch. Whoa. Okay. Wasn't expecting this at all. Thought that that last moment was perfect, but so happy that we got this. Darcy, what did you think of this final sequence? And, you know, maybe we can branch this out as part of a what's going to happen batch. Do you know, will we see Omega ever again?
Well, okay, so as soon as I, you know, this was released, I had to look up when is this final scene taking place. And it's speculated that it's happening around 2 to 4 years before the events of Yavin. So we're right around the time of Rebels, basically.
Wow.
So I don't think we're going to see her per se around this time frame. If anything, we'll see her after the events of the original trilogy. We'll know she's joined the Rebellion at this point because, again, I don't know how many stories you could tell in that original trilogy that would be, have the same impact, knowing what the story, you know, plays out.
Yeah, you're getting too much on top of each other.
There's too
stuff,
much. Yeah. There's too much. Yeah, that'd be too busy, and we don't need it. So, if anything, I'd like to see her maybe afterwards, and we're seeing her part of the New Republic, maybe, or something like that. Yeah. I think that'd be really cool because, again, her piloting skills. She will be fine. I mean, Hunter said it best. She has learn from some of the smartest soldiers in the world. She grew up with them. And, of course, she's going to take all their lessons to heart and go on and just be a total badass in the Rebellion.
Yeah, I mean, I've lost my shit when I... First of all, the shot over Pabu was very reminiscent of the shots we've gotten of Tantiss, which I thought was really cool. And then they showed that hair, and I was like, who is that? She turned, I saw the ponytail, and I like screamed at the TV. But I think I agree with you, Darcy and Justin. I think we're gonna get her like way later. I had a little fan casting for if we see her live action, maybe, because I think that's the best bet with the types of shows that we have going on, Ahsoka, because she knows Hera, and I feel like that's the best place to stick her in there. Wow. Wouldn't it be so cool if somehow they got Margot Robbie?
That'd be cool.
That would line up age-wise, too, for that point.
Right?
That'd be great.
Wow.
That would be incredible. Yeah. Just saying. Putting it out there.
She's Australian, too. I honestly think that if they do it, I would like
the
to
see. The accents are close enough, I guess.
Yeah, sort of.
I'm sure she could do a New Zealand accent because she's from there.
Yeah.
Like from Australia.
I don't know. I would love to see Michelle Aang as actually, like, Omega.
Oh, me too.
And, like, if they gave her, like... I think all they need to do is just give her the blonde hair, right? Like, in all honesty, like, it doesn't need to be, like, you know, total...
One for,
like,
one.
One for one. I think that, you know, like, I know she has a more East Asian aesthetic to her than what Omega might be animated to, but I don't know if that necessarily needs to define the character. But, yeah, this was a very...
Come on, Dad.
This was great. Like, I definitely teared up here, and also, like, the sentiment of, you know, this felt very similar to, you know, the epilogue of Rebels. You know, it's where's the story going, what's next, and what can be next, and not really saying that, you know, it's goodbye, it's see you later, right? In a lot of ways, and I think that just adding this moment, it was so sincere. I love that he's comforting Batcher and just how he says, like, she'll be fine, and
he's comforting himself in that moment.
Exactly, he's talking to himself. Yeah. You know, but
he has to say it.
Yeah, and I it was super super touching, and it definitely has me excited to say, like, we'll see her again, and maybe some other things need to happen in the Star Wars stuff of stories that we're getting and other things to kind of establish where we might see her. Cause I don't think I think they're going to wait. And then once maybe there's a new timeline that's established and then they could get into it, but yeah, bring her into Ahsoka for like a quick cameo experience. Kind of, that'd be interesting if you're going to do a show with her later, in some capacity. But yeah, I think animated would be where I'd like to, they keep her. And if they go after the Battle of Yavin, and they go in between, like, you know, sort of like the Mandalorian period, but, you know, maybe further, maybe moments after the battle on Yavin. So we see what mm-hmm. happens in the sort of early days after that.
Tales
battle.
Of the Rebellion. Come on,
dude.
Let's
we,
do it.
Yeah, that's, let's do there, it. There's so much.
Right? Mon Mothma yeah. losing her family. Like, just maybe Mon Mothma after we see her in Andor season two, whatever that will be. Like, she's becoming the leader of the rebellion. So you've got Mon Mothma on one side, kind of being pulled, like, one, you know, further into the conflict, and then maybe Omega, like, kind of starting her journey. You know, kind yeah. of that could be the two storylines. I'm gonna say something here. It's gonna be, you're gonna be like, that's way too cheesy. Blah. But I'm sorry. The fact that that Hunter is sitting in the darkness, and Omega is revealed by turning the lights on, like, she's the light to his darkness, right? She always has been, and it's just, it's so beautiful. And I don't care how corny that sounds. I just think it was so cute and lovely, and to see an older Hunter, the fact that she can't sneak past him, And yeah, when he says, you're our kid, Omega, you always will be, just hits so hard, because I think this entire sequence felt kind of like real life, right? Like, how it just sort of cuts from her as a kid to her going off on her own, because that's like, you know, I think about the younger kids in my life who I, you know, think like, oh, like last week they were like, you know, in diapers or just learning how to walk, and now they're driving and going to college, and I'm just like, what the heck happened? How is time going by in the blink of an eye? And that's exactly what they did with this epilogue. The moment with Tech's glasses on the dash, literally seconds before, I was like they're gonna do the Han Dice, like in the Falcon, but it's Tech's glasses, and it was so good. I just
love that they added that, though, right? Like, they like, because yeah. he wasn't, oh, yeah. like, his presence was obviously missed throughout, and he was talked about with Crosshair, but, like, just have that there as the reminder for her, it's just so, that's so well done.
And the idea that it's her idea to continue mm-hmm. to fight. It's yeah. her choice to make. And she probably struggled with the idea of, you know, just sort of standing by as the Empire kept growing and growing in power, and they're hearing probably whispers of things from probably Echo. And the fact that she sort of follows in Uncle Echo, in her brother Echo's footsteps, right? Like, he left the group, and that's exactly what she's doing here, right? That's like the last lesson that we get to see her sort of exercising. So she's definitely going to become a pilot for the Rebellion, and I love the idea that she's going to be making use of the tech turn in a future battle, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
that's, you know, Dave, you better give that to us. That's not a threat, but...
That'll be her entrance into whatever she appears in next.
Like, come on. We just see the ship, it does the tech turn, and that's how we know it's her? Ah! Come on. So good. So good. Okay. Before we get to our final thoughts for both this episode and the season, is there anything else the batches want to say one final time? We are going to be rating this episode on a scale of 1 to 5 truly free clones, and the season on a scale of 1 to 5 new adventures. Megan, I'd like you to kick us off.
Oh, God. Get through this without crying. I think this episode did an incredible job at wrapping up this season and the show as a whole, with a couple episodes leading into it that we weren't so sure it was going to be successful at wrapping up the show. So I'm really glad that paid off. We got to see Omega in the best light possible, using all the skills that she's learned throughout this show. We got to see some really incredible endings to some characters that needed their stories ended in this show. The music was beautiful. The animation was beautiful, from the large landscape shots to the small, minute details. It just might be one of my favorite Star Wars pieces of content that I've ever taken in. I've attached myself to this show so much from day one, and I can't wait to see where Omega's story continues from here, with maybe a cameo or two of older Hunter, Wrecker, and Crosshair again, because I know we see Rex in and Rebels. So maybe we can see these guys on Pabu again soon. With all of that said, and the direction that the show is going in, I have to give it a 5 out of 5 truly free clones. And the season as a whole, yes, there were some filler episodes, but that's to be expected with an animated show. I still really enjoyed most episodes, so I'm going to give the whole season a 5 out of 5 new adventures as well.
Okay. All right. Darcy.
Yeah, well, I mean, this finale definitely tied off all the loose ends or threads that I was really concerned about. Again, my biggest gripe being that it introduced some more questions that I have a feeling we might never see an answer to, and that just being the knowledge-grubbing guy I want the answers to everything, so that's going to bug me. But yeah, this episode delivers on so many emotional levels. The action was incredible. The score, the amount of times, like you said at the top of the episode, the way that Kiner's weave in that Bad Batch theme for so many different moments throughout this episode, it feels so good as a closure for the show. So yeah, this one will be getting a 4.5 out of 5 truly freed clones. Again, that whole those Shadow Troopers really bothered me, but going on to the season as a whole, it has been one of the standout episodes or seasons, in my opinion, where it was incredibly consistent up until the lead into this finale, which is unfortunate, but there are so many great moments throughout the series. The action, everything. We're seeing Star Wars animation at its best, and the story is so exciting, and it was so much fun to go to experience. So I'll be giving this series season also a 4.5 out of 5. New adventures?
New adventures. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 4.5 out of 5 new adventures for sure.
Edit.
Oh well, yes. yeah, I think I've kind of alluded to my thoughts about this episode. There's pluses and negatives. The negatives, obviously, like Darcy was saying, the introduction of these new troopers without really giving us any background as to what they are, not even who they are, but what they are and what the bigger story of what Tantus is in Project Necromancer. They left a lot of that on the table, but what they did wrap up were the most important parts for this series, and that is the relationships and the story of these characters, while also leaving some great opportunity for more stories, as we were talking about with the epilogue. There's just so much that is potentially an opportunity there. So I love that they still did that. And, you know, a huge shout out to Jennifer Corbett, you know, working with Dave Filoni. You know, I know a lot of people say, oh, Filoni. Like, it, yes, he's definitely the creative mind who's getting all of these projects made, and he's probably leading a lot of these conversations. But if it isn't for people like Jennifer Corbett, Brad Rao, Josh Rhimes, the entire, like, Lucasfilm animation team that actually stands behind these stories, that the Dee Bradley, Michelle Ang, like, they believe in these characters, then we wouldn't have the heart that we're talking about, the things that we really care about, the character resolutions that we got out of this episode is fantastic. So yeah, it hits in a different way as a season finale and as a series finale. And it, in my opinion, it leaves too much on the table that I'm just like, I really want answers to. So for that reason, I'm going to be giving this the episode a 4 out of 5 truly free clones. For the season as a whole, I think, again, we were talking about it. It started super, super strong. I gave a lot of these episodes off the top like 5 out of 5. I was like, damn, they're nailing it. And they were so freaking good. And then it just kind of slowly declined, and it had a rocky start there. And then it picks back up with this finale and really just kind of highlighting what the purpose of it was meant to be. Like, it's to really focus on these characters. So I can appreciate what it did with its momentum to a certain degree. I think that where it slowed down for me was just a little like jarring, because we were kind of amping up. So I'm going to be giving the season a 4 out of 5 new adventures as well.
All righty. Yeah, I think, you know, I mentioned leading into this episode that I was worried about this finale because the last three episodes, like we've all just mentioned, felt like they kind of stalled out a little bit. But, you know, I at the end of last week's episode, I said we all have to listen to Justin because he's smart, and we should temper our expectations. and that as long as we got a poetic ending with these characters that feels earned and hits me in the feels, I'd be happy. And boy, did this finale hit me. I think the Zillow escape, again, being used as a moment and not the focus of the episode, that happened. The death of Rampart in a meaningful way happened. The epic ending to Hemlock happened. And not bringing Tech back, but still finding a way to honor him in the end, happened. So, that and tons of other moments that I wasn't expecting, including a prologue that leaves room for so many more stories with at least Omega, is incredibly exciting, and I think they just nailed it so much with this episode in so many different ways. This was exactly what I would expect from a series finale. It felt like a movie, and I'm stoked that, with just what they were able to achieve within the 50 minutes that they gave us. I think it's my favorite episode of the season. I'm going to give it a solid 5 out of 5 truly free clones. As for the season itself, this show, this series that spawned from the love of characters that prove that being different is the best thing you can be, and a show that focuses on a family that's brought together through war and survival and ultimately love, with consistently incredible visuals and music and a cast that's, as we've all already talked about, just insanely talented. I think from a technical standpoint, this season was some of the best Star Wars on those fronts. I think the narrative this season had its ups and downs, but out of 15 episodes, I only counted 4 for myself that were subpar. So I think the biggest thing these writers were able to consistently achieve, in ways that I do think the live action side of Star Wars could maybe take some notes, has to be the character development, right? Like I think the words character development when it comes to these watch clubs for the Bad Batch, probably, between that and at least poetic this episode, we've just maybe overused them. The last and time I'll say character development on Star Wars The Bad Batch Watch Club. No, but I think out of all the fantastic elements in this show, the character development is the best feature, and I think this season showcased so much growth for Hunter, for Wrecker, for Crosshair, especially for Omega, especially. And I think, we said in our initial, watch of the show, in our, when we watched the first few episodes, like you said, Justin, you were giving 5 out of 5s. I think it was it's the most consistent season in terms of quality. Mm-hmm. And I think that still remains the case even after a few mid episodes leading to the end. So for that, I'm going to give this third and final season of The Bad Batch 5 out of 5 new adventures. Lucasfilm Animation, come on. And please, more Brad Rao and Jennifer Corbett. Like, Dave Filoni, absolutely. But
they're always going to be there. But they're, they have to, their care and their attention to the story of what they want to do next is what I'm really interested in. I think that, it can only go up.
I hope we find out maybe in August or maybe next year. In Japan, Tokyo.
You got your tickets.
Darcy and I got tickets for mm-hmm. Star Wars Celebration, so we'll be sure to be reporting from Tokyo when that happens. But that is it for this. Sorry, I wrote it this way. Final Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3. We hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you like to listen to podcasts, if you haven't already. And if you want to write into the show with your thoughts or your predictions on the shows we cover in Watch Club, well, you don't have to leave us behind to follow your own path and make us cry all over again. Instead, Megan, can you let the big, beautiful Batches know that if they ever need us, where they can reach us by holo message?
Absolutely. You can reach us at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram at wearegeekcentric and on Twitter. I'm calling it Twitter because it sounds better. At geekcentricyt.
That sounded like the older Omega was just here.
And older wiser. Omega. Older and wiser.
Omega.
They, by that point, they hadn't changed it to X yet, so that's good. That makes sense.
Not yet.
Okay, feel free to join our Discord using the link in our description. We can keep the conversations going. We want to hear your thoughts on this finale, as well as your thoughts on shows like X-Men 97 that, you know, if it hasn't already been put out there, we will be doing a spoiler cast on X-Men 97 because we will have to talk about all the crazy stuff that's going on there. So we want to hear from you. Keep in mind, we have a ton of other episodes covering the latest in movies and TV shows, including our recent spoiler-free reviews for Tales of the Empire, The Fall Guy, Netflix's Dead Boy Detectives, Fallout, Alex Garland's Civil War, Monkey Man, Three Body Problem, and X-Men 97. We also have some great interviews out now, like our most recent interview with the executive producer of the Apple original series, Sugar, Simon Kinberg. Justin sat down with him to talk about how that show pays homage to the classic film noir genre while giving audiences something fresh. And as a self-proclaimed geek, he also talks about what he wants to see next for the X-Men, which is super cool. And for May the 4th, we have two special interviews that are Star Wars-centric, so you'll definitely want to subscribe. Check out all of our interviews either on your podcast service of choice or over on YouTube at youtube.com/geekcentric. Leave a review. It helps us so much. This has concluded our 21st season of Watch Club. Season 21 is in the
21.
Bag. Wow.
Wow.
We can legally drink.
We can legally drink, guys. Hooray. Wait till our...
Can we swear
wait
now?
Till our
can
next swear, Watch yes. Club. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Yeah, naughty Watch.
Season 22, I'm happy to announce, of Watch Club, I'm sure we've already talked about it, will be for The Acolyte. Megan, Darcy, Justin, thank you so much for joining me for this Watch Club. And as we say, for one final time...
Good soldiers follow orders.